This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This episode of the KMP Show is brought to you by Beckett Media. Beckett Media is the most trusted source in sports and pop culture collectibles. And now, with this exclusive promo code, FAN10, you guys can take 10% off anything from the NFL, MLB, NBA, and NHL. Guys, that's 10% off of anything site-wide. Free shipping on select items within the United States as well. Visit voicesofwrestling.com/Beckett today to save. That's voicesofwrestling.com/BECKETT. voicesofwrestling.com/Beckett. Welcome everybody to the KMP Show, episode number 10. Gonna try to have a shorty for you guys today. I am your host, John Playtech.
Everybody has affinity for cock.
You want that cork. Here it is.
Go the other way.
Mike Francesa. Welcome, everybody, to the show, KMP Show, episode number 10. You can follow me, John, on Twitter, at John's Voices. You can also follow the show at K&P Show, K-A-N-D-P Show. You can subscribe to the show's feed on Audioboom at knpshow.com. You can also search the show, K&P Show, on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and leave a rating. We thank everybody that's been sharing the show. Really, you really have. We say it every week, but there's a reason we say every week. The show has been growing incrementally. Every show we do, we keep getting better and better in terms of quality, and our audience continues to grow and grow. So thank you to everybody that's been helping the show grow. You share it, you know sports fans, you know people with whom you talk sports and say, hey, check out this podcast that I listen to. It's called The KMP Show. It's great. They're kind of funny, and they have maybe sometimes unique insights on things, right? I mean, listen, we don't want you to lie. I don't want you to lie. Rich may want you to lie. He's not here. I can say anything I want. He may want you to lie. I, however, don't want you to lie. So don't try to tell them that, they are the Adam Carolla show of sports podcasts. Don't tell them that. Don't tell them that. You don't need to lie. You don't need to lie. You don't need to be a liar. They will believe you because you are special to them. You don't need to come at them sideways with all this crazy shit that they're not going to believe. All you have to do is tell them the truth, and they will believe you because you are you. So if you tell them, hey, there's this show. It's called The KMP Show. You can find it at kmpshow.com or search KMP Show on iTunes. They're kind of funny. They say some funny things once in a while. They have sound drops.
Basically, fuck you.
Exactly. And once in a while, they'll get to talking sports. And when they do, they may have some unique insights, some funny comedy bits that they get to. And it's a fun watch, and you should listen with me, and then we'll talk about it. And then we'll tell our friend Dave about it. Everybody tell Dave. Find a Dave. I want you to go out and find a Dave. I don't care who. I don't even care if he likes sports or speaks English. Find a Dave and say, listen, Dave, you need to listen to the KMP Show. That's your mission going forward, as well as to continue to share it with everybody that you already do. You have been helping out the show tremendously, and I thank you for that. I also thank everybody that's been going to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and bookmarking the click-through link for all your Amazon shopping, everything you buy through Amazon. Go through right now. Just go through your Amazon history. Go through it all. I mean, look at all the crap you buy from Amazon. Oh, God, that one-day shipping is beautiful, isn't it? Isn't that the best thing? It's like Christmas when you're like, oh, man, I really want this diamond-studded dildo, like right now. But I don't want to wait, and I don't want to go through the weird sort of social thing that is going to buy a sex toy, even though that's totally okay. It's okay that you have a sex toy. It's okay that you use sex toys if you do. And we have stores, storefronts, and brick-and-mortar stores dedicated to selling you sex toys, dildos specifically. They have lots of dildos. And you could go there right now and buy a dildo. But you think, you know what? I could go there, yeah, and they got dildos, and they got a nice selection, and, you know, they got the lube right next to it, and I could have a dildo in my hands and maybe elsewhere later today. But I don't want to go to the store, because then you got to go to the checkout, and then you lock eyes with that other human being, and it's not like buying condoms, where when you buy condoms and you kind of share a look with the guy or the girl at checkout, like, yeah, that's what these are for. But it's kind of like it's not imperative, or it's not implied that you're like, I need these condoms right now because I'm going to go use them like tomorrow or today. But if you go and buy a dildo, I got to believe that the amount of people that buy a dildo the day of dildo usage is astronomical. I have to believe that most people you see buying dildos are ready and willing and able to use that dildo right the hell now in the parking lot if they wouldn't get arrested for it. I got to believe that it's not something where you're like, all right, you know what? 2.5 weeks from now on a Thursday, I could really use that bejeweled butt plug. I could really use it. And what am I going to be doing on Thursday? I mean, I want to use it, but, you know, maybe I should go now and have it. And then on next week, Thursday, I'll be ready to use my bedazzled butt plug. Nobody does that. Everybody you see buying a dildo is getting ready to use that dildo. So when you go up to the checkout counter at, you know, Lover's Lane or whatever the other whatever they're called in your neck of the woods. I know when I was driving down to U of I regularly when I was going to school, the ones I would see all the time were Lion's Den. That's what it was called. It was called the Lion's Den, and it was labeled as an adult bookstore, but it was also probably, you know, hookers, blow, dildos, and adult books. Maybe adult movies, DVDs, Blu-rays, I don't know. They were advertising on billboards, so they probably didn't have the kind of technological stuff that, like, a more refined place like a Lover's Lane might have. No, this was the Lion's Den. So they had dildos and books, damn it, and you're going to use them. But when you go there, you're like, you have that moment with the checkout cashier, and if you're buying dildos at a dildo store, you kind of look at each other, and they know, and you know that they know, and they know that you know that they know, and it's like you're getting ready to use this dildo, aren't you? And you're like, oh, man, yeah, I am. But with Amazon, you don't have to do that. With Amazon, it's here. It's like, oh, man, I can buy a dildo, and it'll be here in 2 days if you've got Amazon Prime. But then you go to that dildo page. Same day delivery, baby, or free 1 day delivery. Like if it's early in the morning, you got coffee, like I need a dildo later. And it's like, oh my God, it'll be here later. It's amazing. Thank you, Amazon, from saving me the self-inflicted shame of going to buy a dildo. Really, it's okay if you have sex toys or you whatever it is you feel shamed about. I guarantee you, if you think about it for 5 seconds, you shouldn't be ashamed of it. And with Amazon, it's great because you can have your shameful things delivered to you the same day. But if you go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and you bookmark that click-through link, what you can also do, on top of getting your shameful things delivered to you that same day or the next day for free with Amazon Prime, you help out the show a little bit. Okay, let the KMP show and the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network, Shake Them Ropes, the Voices of Wrestling flagship station, and all the other podcasts out there, let us get a little bit of your dildo money. Okay, and that's it. That's it. You can go off and be however that's said. You can go off and do all that to yourself, to other people, consenting animals, whatever it is you do. I'm not here to shame you. I just want a little bit of your dildo and butt plug money. That's all I want. And if you go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon, you can give us a little bit of your dildo and butt plug money. And nobody's the wiser. Nobody cares. It's none of our business. We'll never know. And you will get the satisfaction of knowing that you're helping out the KNP show and, to a larger extent, the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. So go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. We thank you. Hard to believe that I wrote all that out. That was a single read, if you can believe it. I wrote it all out. It wasn't improv. It was not improv. I wrote all that crap out, and that was a read. It's called acting. No, I didn't. I really didn't write that out. That was a lot of improv, and I'm very lucky that I didn't stumble over myself and start saying horrendous things. But welcome to the KMP show again, everybody. Thank you for sharing all that crap. Follow me at John's Voices and at KMP show. Well, I was going to try to make it a shorty, but we're already almost 10 minutes in. So it looks like this is going to be another one of my failed attempts at a shorty. We got some things to talk about today, and I wanted to bring this to you, the discussion, because I really don't want to be the anti-social justice warrior guy. I really don't. And I'm going to try, as we continue forward, and I know this show has had kind of that hue, especially when I take the reins from Rich. I know the show has kind of had that hue to it, that it's a little bit counterculture maybe a little bit too much counterculture. I mean, I can be self-aware, but things happen and things are brought to me and I see things and I just want to talk about them. And I want to talk about today about Aroldis Chapman being suspended for 30 games by MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred for a violation of the league's new, brand spanking new, domestic violence and sexual assault conduct policy. Aroldis Chapman, the Yankees closer, suspended 30 games for the 2016 MLB season. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we'll also talk about the Aaron Andrews lawsuit against Marriott. Aaron Andrews, the sideline reporter slash personality for now, I believe, Fox Sports 1, previously of ESPN, and she is enthralled in the middle of a lawsuit against Marriott stemming from in an incident in 2009 where a really, really, really creepy dude was able to, like, kind of Danny Ocean his way, not Billy Ocean. Although, you know what? He Danny Oceaned his way to try to be Billy Ocean. I just can't get they call me Billy Ocean. All right. Anyway, I'm done making jokes about a horrendous and actually very creepy and illegal event. The guy went to prison for he knocked out the peephole of Aaron Andrews' hotel room in Nashville and doctored it such that he could then film her without her knowledge and, of course, without her consent, and then was trying to sell the video later to TMZ, and then TMZ said, no, we're not going to buy that, and then we're going to turn you over to the authorities, and he was arrested, and he did a couple years in prison. And apparently, not many people know this, he did it twice. That's the weird part. That's the part that I haven't seen anybody else report. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe it's a confabulation on my part. But he did it twice. There was once at the Marriott in Nashville and then another at a Radisson Hotel in, I believe, Milwaukee. He had that video saved on his hard drive and it was recovered by the FBI and has never seen the light of day. You've only heard about the single Aaron Andrews video or maybe even seen it. And that's what we're going to talk about as well. The watching of Aaron Andrews is a naked body on an incredibly creepy, illegally obtained or illegally filmed naked body. And he did that once and he did it twice. And what? You did it twice? Ugh. Bleh. Creepy, 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 creepy. So we're going to talk about that and her lawsuit and why I'm going to say, and again, this circling back to what I said about trying not to be so overtly anti-culture, but it's or counterculture. I'm not anti-culture. I think I like culture. Screw culture. Culture sucks, man. I'm a science guy, baby. Woo! Science for the win. Or gold. Science or gold. Fuck culture. You don't need culture. Civ 5 reference for you. It's just that I see a lot of people now that it's being talked about in the media, this case, and now that, surprise, surprise, to a lot of people, now that people are talking about the Aaron Andrews video or the lawsuit about the video, a lot of people are going to find the video or going to try to find the video. And a lot of people are in some way shaming those that have watched it, are watching it, and are seeking it out. And I want to talk about that. But I don't want to be that. It's just I feel compelled to, because there's something disingenuous. To me, there's something wrong about shaming somebody for watching a video that they had no part in creating. And then, if we have time, I want to have some fun, sadly at the White Sox expense, but I want to talk about MLB organizational prospect rankings and where the White Sox stack up to the rest of the rest of Major League Baseball, and some surprises at the top of the list that could make the coming seasons if these are your franchises, your chosen franchises, very, very interesting. So now back to Aaron Andrews. Aaron Andrews is enthralled in a lawsuit with a Marriott franchise over this incident again, in which a guy, Michael David Barrett, is the name. Listen, if you have three names, is there anybody, okay? Seriously, is there anybody anybody in the history, tweet me, seriously, this is an honest question. I want you to do the research for me because I'm lazy. Is there anybody, at John's Voices on Twitter, is there anybody who has ever done society a lick of good that has gone by three names? That has had three names? Okay, because Michael David Barrett goes by three names. Hi, I'm Michael David Barrett. I think there's supposed to be a hyphen in there. And it just, maybe my printer doesn't have enough toner, but they go by Michael David Barrett is how, Barrett is addressed throughout all the searching I've done on this, Michael David Barrett. And I'm struck by the fact that everybody that I've seen that has gone by three names is either an incredible prick or somebody that the news is talking about to the point where they have to go to the neighbor. Like, oh, well, Michael David Barrett was always always quiet. He was the quiet one. We never knew that he would go to Nashville and poke out the peephole on Aaron Andrews' hotel room and doctor the peephole so that he could stick his his camera phone up next to it and try to record her naked. So I did some research, and I will try to find where this picks up, because it's a rather long article, but a lot of people are wondering, like, what the hell happened? Especially if you find the video and watch it, again, which we'll get to later, you're wondering, how did this happen? How did this guy do it? And how is Marriott, how is the hotel responsible for this? Aaron Andrews is suing this Marriott franchise for $75 million is what I saw, claiming damages from one lost wages because of the incident. She claims her brand, her image, her career was harmed, and she's not making as much money now as she could have. And also that Marriott, specifically this franchise, acted recklessly and failed to protect her from this absolute and utter creepo. And this is talking about Michael David Barrett in 2013, he was deposed, I believe, concerning this lawsuit. It's taken this long to get to the courts, but this is a story. It picks up here. Quote, in the video, Barrett recalled how he'd watched Andrews at least a dozen times on TV and came up with the idea to sell a nude video of her after seeing that she was trending on Yahoo. Quote, I watch a lot of sports, he said. That's how I knew who she was. At the time, Barrett was in a, quote, financial bind, he said, adding, it was a mistaken judgment that I regret deeply. After confirming that Andrews had booked a room at the Nashville Marriott, Barrett requested one right next to the former ESPN reporter, he said. But when he showed up, a hotel employee told him that the room he had requested was unavailable and that they were going to put him in a different area, Barrett testified. While waiting for his room, Barrett said he went to the hotel restaurant, where he found a house phone that displays room numbers, and called the operator. Can I have Aaron Andrews' room? He recalled asking. They connected me, Barrett continued. On the house phone, it shows a room number, so I knew what room she was in. This guy is trying to... calling up... I didn't even know you could do that. Calling up a Marriott, like, yeah, can I have a room next to a famous celebrity? And they apparently said yes. Like, yeah, sure. Oh, wait, no, we can't have that room. And then it continues. Barrett went up to the 10th floor room and saw that a maid was cleaning the one next door, so he requested to stay there. Quote, so I went back to the front desk and told them about the room, he explained. They went back and verified for me that it was ready, and they checked me into that room. He knew he'd been put next to Andrews because he could, quote, hear her talking on the phone, end quote, on his way in, he said. Their rooms were in an alcove, hidden from view by anyone standing in the hallway, Barrett said. After hearing Andrews leave, he removed the peephole from her door and went back to his own room, where he used a hacksaw to cut off the threads attached to it. I removed the peephole, altered it, he said. I cut off the thread so it was basically a plug and could be put back in. Later on in the day, Barrett returned to his room and heard the shower on in Andrews' room. I went back to the room, and unfortunately for both of us, I could hear that the shower was on in her room when I walked by, he said. I waited until the shower went off. Then I pulled out the plug and waited for the opportunity. Barrett spent several minutes pressing his camera phone against the peephole before deciding enough was enough. I'm not proud of what I did, he insisted. I didn't like what I did. After taking the video in Nashville, he uploaded it to his computer, then later tried to sell it to TMZ, but was unsuccessful, Barrett said. Andrews is suing the Nashville Marriott Marriott's owner and manager. Her lawyers are claiming the hotel was negligent when it allowed Barrett to request a room next to her without asking any questions. Now, that is the ultra creepy and illegal story. Michael David Barrett, not to be confused with former Cubs catcher Michael Barrett, right? That was Michael Barrett, wasn't it? It's much funnier now if I can picture Michael Barrett as the guy. Yep, it is Michael Barrett. Maybe that's why they went by three names. Maybe they said Michael David Barrett just so that, you know, people don't think it was former Cubs and San Diego Padres catcher Michael Barrett. What you been up to, Michael Barrett? What have you been going on? Oh, last season, 2009 in Toronto, 32. Oh, boy. He was pretty bad. He had one good season with the Cubs. Anyway, Michael David Barrett, this incredibly, he did do some time for this incredibly creepy crime. And I always wondered how he did it. And this, the way Barrett was able to procure Aaron Andrews' room number seems, put it this way, okay? I'm not trying to be the jury here. I'm not saying Aaron Andrews isn't entitled to anything because she was indeed harmed by this. And if you've seen even still shots of Aaron Andrews in the courtroom, and I am not enough of a prick, grand opening, grand closing. Show prick. I am the show prick, but I'm not as much of the show prick to see Aaron Andrews crying and claim their crocodile tears. Aaron Andrews looks to be still to this day, 7 years later, it's 7 years after the video was released. She is still incredibly haunted by this act and everything that stemmed from it, whatever it was. And it looks as though it's to this day incredibly devastating. And I can empathize with her without knowing the specific pain that she went through. But I can realize that is a person who was hurting and who does not like to even think about what was done to her by Michael David Barrett. Again, Michael Barrett, not to be confused with former Cubs catcher Michael Barrett. And I just think it's horrible. It's bad. It's a complete and utter invasion of privacy, and it's a violation of proportions that only bested by, I would guess, rape. And that's the only thing. It seems to be that level of just a personal violation. And what's most insidious about it is I saw you, I identified it, and the only reason I did it is because I saw you were popular, I was in a financial bind, and I figured if I MacGyvered my way to get nude pictures of you, I could sell them to TMZ and then be rich and famous and nobody would think about me committing a crime. And I did it anyway, and I got you, and I preyed on you, and creepy, 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 creepy shit. What was Marriott supposed to do? What could Marriott have done about the house phone? Not have it display room numbers? Is that foreseeable that Marriott should not display room numbers because some wackadoo might follow some other celebrity that may be staying at their hotel and blah, 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 blah? And the only thing I can think of is that Marriott was prepared to originally give the guy a room next to Aaron Andrews. He went there already having booked a room under the pretenses, given his deposition, or his testimony at a deposition, that Marriott had already said, oh, you want a room next to Aaron Andrews? Okay, here you go. And they didn't ask why he wanted that specific room. Does Marriott owe a duty to Aaron Andrews to ask a question of another guest trying to rent a hotel? Oh, you want this room? Why do you want this room? Is it to spy on Aaron Andrews? How is Marriott supposed to know? How is anybody supposed to know that somebody who's requesting a specific room may be requesting it for nefarious motives, with a nefarious motive in mind. And what is Marriott supposed to do with the peephole? Like tie it to the door frame or like have like half sealed doors that like they come together in a sandwich and the peephole is like a spider web of steel going through the door so that it's impossible to take out. And it's like 3 inches of Lexan and there's no way you're getting that sumbitch out. I have a hard time believing that although it's a travesty and an awful thing that happened to Aaron Andrews and a horrendous invasion, what was Marriott supposed to do? What was I don't know. And I'm not saying that I know and I have the answers. I just don't know what they were supposed to do. And of course there was harm done to Aaron Andrews. Nobody questions that there was harm done to Aaron Andrews, but I have a hard time, or at least a harder time than most, making the leap of making that specific Marriott franchise owner and manager liable for that hurt. What did they do that was unreasonable, an unreasonable lack of protection, an unreasonable dereliction of their duty to Aaron Andrews? What was it? I just don't see it. And of course, with all of this being in the news, a lot of people are searching it out and trying to find it. I don't know where it is. If you've come here to, or if you're thinking now, geez, I hope he tells me where to find it. I'm not going to, because I don't know where. I don't know where, and I don't care to know. I watched it, I believe at the time. Yes, right at the time this dropped in 2009, Rich and I were doing 643 Sports. And I remember, I believe it was a message board, a sports message board I went to. I think there was a thread. It was like an Aaron Andrews leaked video or Aaron Andrews nude video or nude leaked video, something like that. And I thought, oh, wow. I mean, this was at the time Aaron Andrews was coming up through the ranks of ESPN, and she was, one, a great reporter, great at her job. She was able to run the gamut of sports coverage, and she was a sideline reporter, and she was incredibly beautiful, and she was, I don't know, being sold as a sex idol, like the fictional Vincent Chase in the first season of Entourage. I don't know if she was on that course, but there was no denying that ESPN knew Aaron Andrews was beautiful and wasn't shy about playing up that aspect of Aaron Andrews' physical features. And so at the time, 2009, I have a sports podcast. Aaron Andrews is a sports celebrity of sorts, a beautiful sports celebrity, and here is apparently a link to Aaron Andrews naked. And I clicked on it and I watched it. The video was, what did they say here? A couple minutes, 10 minutes, about 10 minutes is what they said. I removed the people, blah, blah, blah. I waited the shower turn up. Barrett spent several minutes pressing his camera phone against the people before deciding enough was enough, quote, enough was enough. And I clicked and I watched it and I saw somebody that looked like Aaron Andrews, incredibly grainy. This was 2009, and it was a camera phone through a peephole, and naked walking around. And I watched it, and then I believe we talked about it on 643 Sports. So that's my ultimate defense for having watched the video. Everybody that's upset at everybody for watching the video is that I watched it because I wanted to be able to talk about what it was on my sports podcast, on my very, 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 very bad sports podcast. And now, in the age of, now keep in mind, people in 2009 were horrified by the video. They were horrified at the creepiness of it. But I don't remember one person, I know personal incredulity is a bad way to go about arguing things, but I don't remember one person saying, hey, you shouldn't watch this because you are now aiding in Aaron Andrews' invasion of privacy. Not once did I hear them. Now that it's come up again in 2016, and now that we have in the age of identity politics and social justice warriors, now, if you look around Twitter, you look around the blogosphere, you listen to sports talk shows that have taken up that mantle of white knighting and social justice warriors, you hear a lot of that now. How could anybody watch it? What you are a bad person for having watched, you have questionable morals, or that was amoral of you to watch the video of Aaron Andrews. And I just, no, it's okay for you to seek out and watch the Aaron Andrews video. The only chance I can think of, the only point that one of these people may be able to make is that now that her emotional devastation about the very existence of that video is a matter of public record, now you actively seeking it out is morally, it's not bad, but it's just, come on, man, what are you doing? That's really the only argument that I see. But to argue that because this video was obtained illegally, it was recorded illegally, that if you are somehow watching it, you are cutting against the moral fiber of America, or you are committing an amoral act because this video was obtained illegally. And the jump is so severe and so asinine because the same standard isn't applied to people like this.
He's got AIDS.
The same standard was not applied to Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling was recorded saying offensive shit like this about Magic Johnson.
He's got AIDS.
About why his girlfriend shouldn't be messing around with Magic Johnson.
He's got AIDS.
How did I get this soundbite?
He's got AIDS.
How did I get that? That was a personal conversation between Donald Sterling and his girlfriend in his private residence, which she recorded surreptitiously and then released to show that Donald Sterling is this awful, awful human being, et cetera, et cetera.
He's got AIDS.
And that's probably true because Donald Sterling has more than once been accused of denying equal housing or violating equal housing laws. And in this tape...
He's got AIDS.
And I'm playing it a bunch because I have it.
He's got AIDS.
And I shouldn't have it.
He's got AIDS.
But it's funny.
He's got AIDS.
Because Donald Sterling,
he's got AIDS,
is a racist old white man.
He's got AIDS.
And everybody, the society would probably be better off if
he's got AIDS.
Donald Sterling,
he's got AIDS,
died. Because he's a bad dude. He's a bad guy. But why do I have that? Why did I listen to it? Why was Donald Sterling forced to sell the LA Clippers because...
He's got AIDS.
Because of that. Donald Sterling was forced to sell his own personal property because...
He's got AIDS.
That got leaked to the public, and it was blasted everywhere. Everywhere. California is a two-party state, meaning if you are going to record a conversation with somebody, both parties have to be aware of the recording. Donald Sterling was not made aware of it, and that recording was made surreptitiously in violation of California law, and then it was leaked to the public, and the public took it and ran with it and went fucking nuts. I have it.
He's got AIDS.
I've got it, and it's funny because he's an old man saying crazy, stupid things. Okay. I still shouldn't have it. It was obtained surreptitiously, it was obtained illegally, and it was published without the consent of Donald Sterling, yet everybody played it. Everybody played it. Everybody judged Donald Sterling for the content of the surreptitious illegal recording. And nobody anywhere ever said, well, except me at the time of the Lefty Show, nobody else I saw ever said, hey, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do this because, well, that recording was made illegally. And now you're sharing an illegally made recording. And not only are you viewing it and judging people based on the content of it, you're driving others to watch it, and you're sharing it, and you're blasting it over your 50,000-watt blowtorch with clear channel protection by the FCC, and you're doing all that. You shouldn't do that. This is a man who, yes, has said horrible things, but they were made in private, and they were recorded illegally, unlawfully recorded, and then released to the public. You are committing an amoral act. Nobody said that. Nobody said, hey, you are being immoral if you share the Donald Sterling tapes and you judge him for what's on it. Nobody said that. So why is it that it's immoral of me to watch, at the time, Aaron Andrews, who's being sold to me as an object of desire, of not only is she good at her job, but she's incredibly beautiful too. She's the package. She's the 10. She's the good. She's got it all. And then I see a video, I see a link entitled Aaron Andrews Naked. I'm going to click that, son of a bitch. You bet your ass I'm going to click it. Especially because I have a sports podcast that I say now. But if you're going to apply the same moral, if you're going to apply some moral standard to somebody, You better apply it everywhere. And it doesn't matter that what Donald's, that the content of Donald Sterling's tape was nefarious. It was bad. It was grimy, racist, all that stuff. The content doesn't matter. If you're going to make the argument that I am wrong for watching something I had no part in creating, no aid in creating, I did not commission it of any kind, I did not reward the maker of it, I didn't buy it, I didn't rent it, I didn't do anything like that, it was posted publicly and I viewed it, if you're going to say that I am now somehow a party to the tort/crime committed against Aaron Andrews, that same fucking standard better be applied everywhere else, and it's not, and that's wrong. And that's wrong. So don't tell me that I am a bad person, or I am somehow less of a person, or look down your nose at me for watching something when you probably listened to this.
He's got AIDS.
When you probably shared it, when it was probably a part of your show, your blog, your column, your Twitter feed, whatever it is, you talked about this.
He's got AIDS.
And this,
he's got AIDS,
was obtained illegally. But now, it's Aaron Andrews. Oh, you're a bad person if you watch that. How could you think to do that? Well, because Aaron Andrews was being, in part because Aaron Andrews was billed as this, an object of desire. It's the same thing that happened with the fappening, an object of desire, and I can't have it, and I can't have it, and that's going to create this want in me, and I just can't have it, and that's going to drive, I can't wait to see her and see what she has to say, and she's so smart and funny and then beautiful on top of it, and oh my goodness. And then I see something that says, oh, well, here she is naked. You want to see that? Yeah, bet your ass I want to see that. The same thing happened in the fappening. Jennifer Lawrence called it a sex crime. And I didn't see anybody say, no, J-Law, it's not a sex crime, okay? It's not a... She called people viewing the fappening pictures, that, again, horrible invasion of her privacy, that crime committed against her, and that incredible invasion and that yuckiness, that the same thing of Aaron Andrews that I can only start to... That's akin to or on the road to the invasion and the violation of something like a rape. She said, if you view it, that's a sex crime. That's wrong. You are wrong for viewing it. I hate everybody that's done it. And nobody said, sorry, J-Law, listen, the crime was the guy hacking into your iCloud account and then distributing and trying to sell things that weren't his to sell. Okay. That's the crime. People viewing it on public websites, people viewing the pictures, whether they're cropped, edited, censored or not, is not a sex crime. It's not a moral ambiguity. It's not an amoral act to view the fappening pictures. And it's not an amoral act to look up and view the Aaron Andrews video. As illegally created as it was, as much of a violation, as much as it is emotionally devastating, that violation to Aaron Andrews, it's not wrong of you to find it, to seek it out, and to watch it. All right, we're going to take a break on the KMP show. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Aroldis Chapman being suspended 30 games by MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred. You got the KMP show. We'll be right back.
KNP fans, be sure to head over to voicesofwrestling.com this week for an all-new episode of Shake Them Ropes. Each week, Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins bring you Shake Them Ropes, talking all things WWE and NXT. Rob and Jeff will talk all the latest news coming out of WWE, the news heading into NXT TakeOver, and get your thoughts on the build-up to WrestleMania 32. If you're into nostalgia, every week Rob and Jeff discuss a new match on the WWE.com list of the top 100 matches to see on WWE Network. We run through the greatest matches in the history of pro wrestling, and you can share your thoughts on Twitter at ShakeThemRopes. In addition to our weekly episodes, after every WWE pay-per-view, we also go live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling YouTube at voicesofwrestling.com/YouTube, and you can follow along to a live video stream as Shake Them Ropes goes live after every WWE pay-per-view. So fans, do not miss all new episodes of Shake Them Ropes. Voicesofwrestling.com. That's voicesofwrestling.com. For the best in pro wrestling coverage and commentary, look no further than Voices of Wrestling. Hi everybody, Rob McCarron here, and at Voices of Wrestling, we specialize in coverage of wrestling in the US and abroad. New Japan Pro Wrestling, Pro Wrestling NOAH, Dragon Gate, Revolution Pro Wrestling, Evolve, Ring of Honor, and yes, WWE and NXT. We have it all. Reviews of every major show. Podcasts that cover it all, including the flagship Voices of Wrestling podcast hosted by Rich Craich and Joe Lanza. You won't get opinion this diverse from anyone else. Subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Watch our live shows on YouTube. And check out our daily reviews. All of this and more at voicesofwrestling.com.
This segment of the KMP Show is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek enables fans to quickly and easily discover the best deals for sports, concert, and theater events. The company's interactive stadium apps, deal score, and comparison shopping experience provide fans with the buying intelligence needed to find the best prices from trusted ticket markets and purchase tickets seamlessly. Use deal score and SeatGeek's intuitive comparison shopping by visiting voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek today. That's voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek. Visit that today when you're booking your flights. You want to go watch some spring training baseball, or you're going to get in line. You want to get yourself some MLB, your favorite team's tickets before the season starts. Check out SeatGeek and go to voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek for some great deals. And of course, you'll be helping us out. Welcome back to the KMP Show. I'm your host, John.
He's got AIDS.
I don't have AIDS. I'm on PrEP. Although, oh no, PrEP is not as good as we thought it was. It's not the ultimate prevention of HIV that many people thought it would be. But 99.98% that's still pretty good. When we left off, I said we were going to talk a little bit about Aroldis Chapman. And lovely man that Aroldis Chapman is, the wonderful, probably loving, just loving man that Aroldis Chapman is, was suspended for 30 games of the 2016 MLB season by MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred this week for a domestic violence incident. I'll say now, Aroldis Chapman was never charged and, of course, as a result, never convicted. The reasoning for the lack of charges, says the people investigating the crime, are conflicting stories from the victim, as well as a lack of cooperation from the victim, as well as one outlet I read, witnesses. It stems from an incident in which Aroldis Chapman is accused of choking and hitting his girlfriend and then going outside and firing a handgun he owned 8 times into the wall of an attached garage. One of the bullets went through the window and into an adjacent empty field. The police investigated, found no evidence of injury, as far as I understand it, on the accuser, or the alleged victim. And according to Florida law, what Aroldis Chapman did with his firearm, as it was not a crime. Which it's funny because part of me wants to say, good, all right, yeah, you should be able to fire a gun on your own property. But the other part of me says, you're firing a gun on your own property and one of the bullets you fire goes through a window and into an adjacent field. At least arrest the guy and charge him with, you know, negligent or reckless discharge of a firearm, right? Like, that's gotta be. I'm not a lawyer. Again, time to say I'm not a lawyer, nor am I a prosecutor, nor am I a judge. But you know what? If you go read the reckless discharge of a firearm statute on the books in Florida, I guarantee you, you can come up with some reading that would allow for the arrest of Aroldis Chapman once you investigate and find out, hey, what's this broken window from? Oh, yeah, one of the bullets went through there. And what's that field over there? Oh, yeah, that's not my property. Okay, so you fired a gun from your property and one of the bullets happened to go through a window and into somebody else's property, right? Yeah, that's got to be, if not convictable reckless discharge of a firearm, just arrest the guy, right? Like, what's the investigation? Like, where they go in, like, yeah, that's not a, I mean, Florida sounds pretty cool. If you can fire a gun into somebody else's property and they go, well, at least it didn't kill anybody, you're free to go. But this is a story from, I forget where I got it from. Where did I get it? I should really source these. Oh, good thing I'm not getting paid to do it. The second case for Major League Baseball's new domestic abuse policy has hit, and this time games without pay are involved. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred has announced that New York Yankees pitcher Aroldis Chapman will be suspended 30 games without pay at the start of the regular season, beginning with opening day. Until then, Chapman will continue to participate in all spring training and preseason games and activities prior to the commencement of his suspension. In a sign that the newly jointly agreed upon policy between the league and union is working early on, Chapman did not appeal the discipline, something he had said more than once he was considering and had to do the right to do as part of the joint domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy reached last year. Quote, "Today, I accepted a 30-game suspension from Major League Baseball resulting from my actions on October 30th, 2015, Chapman said in a statement. I want to be clear. I did not in any way harm my girlfriend that evening. However, I should have exercised better judgment with respect to my actions, and for that, I am sorry. The decision to accept a suspension, as opposed to appealing one, was made after careful consideration. I made this decision in an effort to minimize the distractions that any appeal would cause the Yankees, my new teammates, and most importantly, my family. I have learned from this matter, and I look forward to being part of the Yankees' quest for a 28th World Series title. Out of respect for my teammates and my family, I will have no further comment." The MLB Players Association, in a statement, released a statement in part that said, quote, "Its members do not condone the mistreatment of others by playing or non-playing personnel," end quote, adding that they honored Chapman's decision to not pursue an appeal, but would continue to protect the players where warranted as part of the policy. And that's the really interesting part right there is when the MLB Players Association, the union, acquiesces to a union member's request to not seek relief from a management imposed fine or suspension, and Chapman is going to lose 30 game checks. I read somewhere it's believed to be about a little bit north of $1.3 million as a result of this suspension. And when the union says, "Okay, we won't go to bat for you on this," because remember, As much bad press as sometimes the union, as unions in general get, whether they be professional athlete unions or you're talking about the Policemen's Benevolent Association, I believe in New York that is the chosen name of the police union. In Chicago, they have something different. When the union gets bad press, because they always go to bat for people accused of bad shit. They always go to bat for people that are going to be punished for the bad shit that they were accused of or convicted of. And while the unions get bad press for that, I have a different understanding, because that's their job. Their job isn't to dole out justice. Their job is to represent their union members. Their job is to protect their union members. And you best believe, if this was anything else, if this was a 30-game suspension for a first-time violation of the league's steroid or substance abuse policy, the MLBPA, despite what Chapman said, the MLBPA would have appealed and it would have gone to arbitration. They might have lost, but that's what they do because that's their job. So when the MLBPA says, "Well, we don't condone what people think happened. We're not saying it did happen, and we back our guy, but we're not going to back him in this specific case," that's pretty telling. What I think has happened here is that the MLB and the Players Association have been able to come to a sort of understanding, and they've kind of, I don't know if it's been overt. I don't know if anybody has ever said, you know, blah, 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 blah. It may be that they just decided on, they looked around and they said, oh man, you know what? They came to their own conclusions and they just happened to be in lockstep on this. They couldn't fuck this up. The MLB couldn't, they could probably afford it, they could probably spare it, they could probably survive it, but it would be a massive, massive PR boondoggle if Commissioner Rob Manfred would have come down too hard and forced the MLB Players Association to say, okay, come on, please, like, you got to step in. on behalf of a guy accusing of choking and hitting his girlfriend and then firing a gun and recklessly discharging a firearm. You got to come in and protect this guy. And if Manfred would have come down too hard on that and forced the MLBPA's hand, that looks bad for everybody, because the layperson isn't going to differentiate between the MLB Players Association and the MLB. And if Manfred comes off as too soft with a 10-game suspension for a closer who's probably eligible to pitch in maybe what, 60%? I don't know. I'd have to look up Chapman's usage, how the Yankees have been, or how he's been used throughout his career. But if Manfred comes down too soft, that looks bad for baseball. And I think this statement by the MLB Players Association is a nod to that they understand that this time, this first big time suspension, this first big time punishment handed down through the new jointly agreed upon domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy, they have to get this right. And by all accounts, they did. 30 games is about, what did I do? I did the math. Excuse me. I did the math earlier on Twitter, but I forgot it. 30 games of 162 games, that's about 19%. Now, if you take, a 16-game game season of, say, the NFL, and you suspend somebody for 19% of it, you'll get about 3 games. So I ask you, here's my question, and this will be good. This is good to decide if Rob Manfred's punishment is too harsh, too lenient, or right in the middle, and if, quote, the media, or people whose job it is to be outraged at the NFL's lack of punishment for accused and not convicted domestic abusers, is if Roger Goodell, if a player in the NFL was accused of choking and hitting his girlfriend in Florida and then going out to an attached garage and firing off a gun into the wall 8 times, and one of those bullets broke through the window and flew into an adjacent property not owned by the NFL player, not charged with reckless discharge of a firearm, but it looks and sounds and smells like reckless discharge of a firearm. If given the same thing, the same cops, the same lack of charges, the same stated reasons for the lack of charges, and Roger Goodell comes down with a 3-game suspension, okay, no priors. Aroldis Chapman, as I understand it, has had no prior run-ins with the MLB and any of their policies, so it's a fresh, clean player who's been in the league for a couple years. Roger Goodell comes down and says 3 games. Is that enough? Is that enough? Are you upset by it? Imagine, again, this isn't Rob Manfred. This isn't the MLB. It's 3 games for player X in the NFL. Same occurrence, same scenario, except it's Roger Goodell and the NFL. And it's 3 games. I got to believe that there are going to be people, there would be plenty of people that would, even perhaps some of the people that are heralding this as Rob Manfred and the MLB getting it right, quote, getting it right. I have to believe that some of those people would, if it was Roger Goodell, 3 games isn't enough. No, it's got to be 5 games, half a season, an entire year because a gun was involved, et cetera, et cetera. I just don't think that Roger Goodell would be getting... Nobody would be, very, very, very few people would be saying, you know what, Roger Goodell got this right. But after all the other crap that he's done and all the need for the commissions and the this and the that and the phony baloney committee of women to talk about diversity and women's issues and domestic violence in the NFL, for all that crap, he got this one right. If it was this exact same scenario, but a player in the NFL and Roger Goodell said 3 games, there's no way. There's no way that he's being heralded in the way Rob Manfred is. And I wonder why that is. Is it some bias against the NFL and Roger Goodell? Are they paying? Would Roger Goodell be paying for the past sins of Ray Rice, the alleged sins of Ray Rice and Greg Hardy and Adrian Peterson? Is it just that? Is it explained away by that? Or is there something else at play? You're free to, again, tweet the show at KNP Show, tweet me at John's Voices. And we'll discuss. I'd love to have an open discussion about this, because I just, in my mind's eye, it doesn't pass the eye test. It really doesn't. And I wonder what's at play. Indeed, it could be past sins. It could just be past sins of Roger Goodell. But part of me thinks that, you know what? A lot of people would be saying he came down too soft if Aroldis Chapman was an NFL player. And I think that a lot of people expect a lot more from the NFL than they do the MLB, even though 30 games sounds like a lot of a 162-game season, especially for a closer, a relief pitcher who's not eligible to play 162 games or his arm will fall off. It doesn't seem like enough for an NFL player. And if it's not enough for an NFL player, why is it enough for an MLB player? Is it because the MLB hasn't had the supposed domestic violence issues? Is it because the NFL is a more violent sport played by men that are largely much more viewed as barbaric, as violent, as gladiators, whereas baseball is kind of just they're athletic, but baseball is it's America's pastime. It's, you got grilled some dogs and the smell of the ballpark and the blah, blah, blah. Nobody says, oh man, I can't wait to go to an NFL stadium and smell the hot dogs being cooked. Nobody says that. Is it because the NFL is a predominantly black league, and those black players tend to be more, they're violent, and you associate the violence with the predominantly black makeup of the NFL? Is there something to that? Do people subconsciously want more vicious justice handed down to NFL players, in part because they are barbaric, perhaps barbaric black or violent black men? Is there something there? I don't know. It seems like an interesting thought experiment, because I guarantee you 3 games from Roger Goodell is not enough, but the equivalent percentage, 30 games of 162 game season for Aroldis Chapman, and Rob Manfred is the boy wonder. Oh, he got it right the first time out. Yay. Now Jose Reyes, his suspension is going to have to be handed down, or some kind of discipline, because he is charged with a crime for his domestic violence incident in which his girlfriend alleges he pushed her into a window, I believe, during an argument. And he was arrested, and he is charged, and his trial's coming up. So Rob Manfred's going to be tested twice, and he got it right here, but would have Roger Goodell gotten it right? Or if Roger Goodell ascribed the same or similar punishment, do you think people would be saying he got it right too? All right. Well, you know what? I wanted to talk a little bit about organizational prospect rankings, and I'll try to wrap it up quick. We'll get to it, because I want to talk baseball. Baseball's here. It's fun. It's spring training baseball, which always isn't the best. But, it's fun anyway. It's baseball, and you hear the crack of the bat and the green grass, and you can turn it up, and you just hear that dull roar that I talked about. I heard it today. Oh, I loved it. This is from Baseball America. I believe still Baseball America is the gold standard for prospects, organizational prospect rankings. Baseball Prospectus is right up there, but they have yet to release their full prospect rankings. They are still going through and listing the top 10. But I will likely be mixing between the two, Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus. This is interesting, because here is Baseball Prospectus. They rank all 30 MLB teams in terms of their farm system. And as I understand it, that farm system's ability to generate MLB contributing talent. And the top 10 here is interesting, because there are some teams, there are some good teams. There are some damn good teams. This was updated on February 11th, 2016. There are some damn good teams on this list that are already playoff bound, are already have made the playoffs, and they look to be good. They're good, they're young, and they're going to stay good for a long time. And there's other teams that are right there that are going to be good, and there's other teams that... Is this the time when it comes together? Have they added that big free agent pitcher, and now their farm system is ready to generate a lot of top flight MLB talent? First up, in what has got a bit of a surprise to me, the LA Dodgers, number one overall ranked by Baseball America. Again, this is as of February 11th, 2016. The Dodgers are number one. In 2015, Baseball America was nice enough to provide the organization's ranking in the same category for 2015, 14, 13, 12, and 2011. The Dodgers are the Dodgers. God, I love Vin Scully. That, I can't wait for that too. Oh, I got to get MLB TV because I just want to hear. I just want to hear Vin Scully. I don't know if this is his last season, but I love you, Vin. If you're listening, welcome to the KMP show. Be sure to share it with your friends. Big stroker. The Los Angeles Dodgers, number one. Okay, the Dodgers. The Dodgers, a team with Clayton Kershaw, Adrian Gonzalez, and now the top flight of young MLB talent. Again, with the attrition of MLB talent and even the most ardent big prospect guys and the biggest, you know, wang whipping scout, they're wrong. And you know what? They're wrong a lot if you go through the draft. But so, just because the Dodgers are ranked the highest doesn't mean that, oh my God, you'll see a bunch of 20, 21, and 22-year-olds, you know, giving you 5+ wins above replacement seasons in 2016 or even in 2017. You may never see them, but it's fun to think about. The Dodgers making the playoffs last year, they were knocked out, but with this young core, a great pitching rotation, and apparently a young farm system that's ready to contribute. In 2015, they were ranked third. In 2014, they were 14th, 19th in 2013, 23rd in 2012. So that new ownership group has really turned the Dodgers around, and they look to be good for a good long while. Number two, wow, is the Houston Astros. They were 10th in 2015, 5th in 2014, 9th in 2013. 2016, still the second overall ranked MLB farm system. They were a playoff team as well. They look to be pretty damn good. The Atlanta Braves, they're going to be bad, but they're number three overall, up from 29th in 2015, trading away Jason Hayward. Obviously had a lot to do with that. They were able to kind of reset and restock their farm system. So we'll see how that comes up. Number four is something interesting. Number four, I want to watch the Boston Red Sox. They're number four, up from number five in 2015. They were number two in 2014, six in 2013. Number four, they just added David Price, a team that missed the playoffs, was six games below 500 in the traditional way that it's calculated. But here's the thing. Here's an odd thing I just realized. 78 and 84 was the 2015 Boston Red Sox. Normally, you would say that team is six games below 500, right? Because if you divided 78 by 84, you would get a number below 0.5 or 0.500. But that team played 162 games already. There exists not an MLB season in which you could play the six games requisite for them to get to 500. Those six games don't exist because there's 78 and 84. 78 plus 84 equals 162, I'm pretty sure. And those games have already been played. They've been decided. So to say they're six games under 500 is to punish them for not winning games they couldn't have won. What you should be saying. Now, of course, it does work during the course of the regular season when there are games left to be played. You can say, as long as there are six games left to be played, you can say they're six under 500. But with the completed season, they're really, if you think about it, they're only three games below 500, because if you take three of their losses and turn them into wins, those three losses get added to the win column. They also get subtracted from the loss column. So while you might want to say, well, the 2015 Boston Red Sox were six games below 500, they weren't. They were only three games below 500 because they only needed to convert three losses to wins in order to be 500. It was just something interesting. I thought about that. I don't know if I'm just discovering something that people have known for a long-ass time. It was something I was doing research for this bit on the show, and I thought, oh, man, huh, that's pretty cool. All right, back to the list. Number five, the Washington Nationals. Interesting. 16th in 2013. They were number one overall in 2012. Obviously, that was Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper. They're up and contributing to the MLB squad. 2013, they fell to 16th overall. 2014, they were 21st. In 2015, they were 12th. And now they are number five, a team that just missed the playoffs and had some inner turmoil. But now with Dusty Baker at the helm, and hopefully Jonathan Papelbon will stop choking people, that will be a very interesting team to watch, especially if those guys are going to be coming up. And we, you know, Rich is a baseball prospectus guy, so we can get really super nerdy with coming MLB prospects. Hopefully the next time we can convene to record a KMP show, hopefully I can convince him to talk about MLB prospects. I don't think I'll have to work too hard. The other team that I saw that was really interesting in the top 10, the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers are number seven, according to Baseball America and their ranking of each organizational farm system. The Rangers won the AL West last year, 88-74. Pretty good record. They have a top 10 farm system. So you have, of all the teams that made the playoffs last year, of all the teams, the Dodgers, the Cubs are down. I believe they've fallen, according to Baseball America, they have fallen quite far. Yes, they're 20th overall now, but they've sucked long enough. Those guys are contributing. They've got their Kyle Schwarber, their Chris Bryant, and all those. I'm blanking on the names now. Oh man, I need to get better at this. Anyway, they're up and contributing. That's good. But of the, let's see, it's three of, so of the 10 teams that made the playoffs last year, the Rangers, the Astros, and the Dodgers, and the, yeah, of the 10 teams, three are in the top 10. Of the 10 teams that made the playoffs, three playoff teams from last year are in the top 10 of MLB farm systems. So those, I would say those are the teams to watch. Now, for those that are sad and want to be sad and want to be continue to be sad, all you just have to look at the Chicago White Sox. They are listed as 23rd overall, according to Baseball America. They were 20th in 2015, 24th in 2014, 29th in 2013. In 2012, they were the worst farm system in all of baseball. And they have only managed to come to 23 in those four years. Now, they do have a very top-heavy system, so there are a few choice guys. We're talking about Carson Fulmer and Tim Anderson specifically, who are slated to be MLB contributors in the next year or two. But after that, the amount of talent in the Chicago White Sox farm system falls off precipitously. It is incredible to fall off from the two top guys, Tim Anderson, number one, Carson Fulmer, number two. And here's the worst part, okay? Here's the worst part. Tim Anderson, here's his 2015 line. 312 batting average, 350 OBP, 429 slugging, 5 home runs and 49 stolen bases and 550 plate appearances at AA Birmingham, which is in the Southern League. Now, the Southern League tends to be a pitcher-friendly league, as I understand it. It's, again, the Southern League, and in the South, there's a lot of humidity, which aids a lot of breaking ball pitchers, and it hampers equally home run hitters, hitting, you know, people hitting for power into the gaps, etc. But your top guy, OBP 350, 429, was, you know, OPS is decent, but that's your top prospect is Tim Anderson. He's a really toolsy guy. His rating is, his highest rated tool is a 70 speed. They say Baseball Prospectus on the breakdown of him, he's one of the best athletes in the 2013 draft, and he may have a little bit of pop, but that's about it. Carson Fulmer, in 2015, after being drafted, a 1.96 ERA across 23 innings, 17 hits, 9 walks, and 26 Ks across the Arizona Instructional League and High A Winston-Salem. He's they rate him as having a plus fastball and a plus curveball, as I guess the rating is how the rating system would go. And then after that, it's Spencer Adams, whose highest aspiration is a number three starter. Carson Fulmer can be a number three starter, maybe a little better, and a high leverage reliever. Here are the top two prospects of the Houston Astros. Okay, that was the White Sox. That is the, those are the two best guys, Tim Anderson and Carson Fulmer. There's basically nobody else. And this is a team that's apparently in the middle of a championship window, the organization says. The top executive brass says the White Sox are in the middle of a championship window with a bunch of guys that are on the wrong side of 26 or 27 and really no long-term offensive prospects to speak of as far as young players in the minor league system. This is Alex Bregman of the Houston Astros. His 2015 stats: 294 batting average, 366 OBP, 415 slugging, 4 home runs, 13 stolen bases, and 311 plate appearances at low A Quad Cities and high A Lancaster. He is rated as a first division shortstop by Baseball Prospectus. Here's the best part. Oh, this is going to be so good. AJ Reed is the number two, a first division first baseman rated by Baseball Prospectus. 2015 stats, batted 340, 432 OBP. He slugged 612. The man slugged 612. He hit 34 home runs, no stolen bases. Pfft, what a bastard. In 622 plate appearances at high A Lancaster and double A Corpus Christi. AJ Reed is going to do, AJ, he may suck. He may end up sucking. But you know what? If I was a Houston Astros fan, I would drive to double A Corpus Christi to find out, to just watch this guy mash the ball all over the yard. And this is a team that has sucked for a while. And they've drafted smart. They've drafted, gone through the draft time and again. If you go through and look at where they've been ranked organizationally, the Houston Astros, in 2011, they were 26th overall. In 2012, they were 17th. In 2013, they were 9th. 2014, 5th. 2015, 10th. A little bit of a dip, and now they're number 2. The overall progression has been up, and nothing but up, and they still have a dearth of young talent ready to come and kick your ass and take names and make them good for a long-ass time. The Chicago White Sox, albeit the second team, still in a major, in a real-ass market. Chicago is a real-ass big-boy baseball market. And this is what the White Sox can offer you. 27th overall in 2011, 30th overall in 2012, the worst, then the second worst in 2013, 24th in 2013, 20th, and now 23rd. There's no progression there. There's no getting better. They haven't drafted smart. If you go through the Chicago White Sox draft history, here, we'll go, let's go Baseball Reference draft. Let's go look at, just real quick, just humor me, okay? I'm sorry. I want to look at the first round picks of the Chicago White Sox. And let's go see why it is exactly that this organization has shown no progress, no progress at all to speak of, no trend in their ability to produce talent from the draft. We'll start at the year 2000, okay? Joe Borchard, drafted first overall with the number 12 pick, ended up being a negative 1.5 war. Then Wyatt Allen, never made it to the majors. Chris Honell, never made it to the majors. Royce Ring, negative 0.9 war. Brian Anderson, in 2002, Royce Ring was the number 18 overall pick. Brian Anderson was the number 15 overall pick, negative 0.2 war. Then the sandwich round in 2004, the 38th overall pick was Gio Gonzalez, whom the White Sox never got any contribution from because he's been traded back and forth a bunch of times. Then the sandwich pick in 2004, the 34th overall pick, Tyler Lumsden, never made it to the major leagues. 2004, the 18th overall pick, Josh Fields, negative 1.1 war. 2005, the 15th overall pick, Lance Broadway, 0.3 war in his career. 2006, the 29th overall pick, Kyle McCulloch, never made it to the major leagues. 2007, the number 25 pick, again, they were good for a couple of years, so they were picking down in the draft. Aaron Pareda, he was a wash. The number 8 overall pick in 2008 is Gordon Beckham, who's only been able to manage 7.1 WAR. His highest and best use now is a late-inning defensive replacement and Sunday spot start guy because he cannot hit. In 2009, the 38th overall pick in the sandwich round was Josh Fegley. Josh Fegley from Hawk Harrelson.
That is totally absurd.
I know. I know you love Josh Fegley, Hawk, but Josh Fegley's bad. He's only amassed a 1.5 WAR. Jared Mitchell was the 23rd overall pick in 2009. He never made it to the major leagues. Chris Sale was the 13th overall pick. They struck gold with Chris Sale. He's been good, 26.2 WAR. 2011, the 47th overall pick in the sandwich round, Kenyon Walker, never made it. Keon Barnum, never made it. The 13th overall pick, Courtney Hawkins, hasn't made it to the MLB. 17th overall pick, Tim Anderson, hasn't made it. Carlos Rodon has. He looks to be good. And Carson Fulmer has. He looks to be good. The White Sox, great at picking pitchers, right? Chris Sale, Carlos Rodon, and Carson Fulmer. Pretty good. They can't. If you can't draft position players, your organization is going to suck. And your organization is going to suck way out loud, especially when you're the White Sox and you play in U.S. Cellular Field. And that is why, kiddies, if you're a White Sox fan, you have a lot of things to view as perilous. The White Sox season, I know they try to tell you the bill of goods on this team is, oh, we're going to be competitive again. We were historically bad last year for no reason. We were historically unlucky and blah, 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 blah. But look, when your organization, when you are habitually one of the worst ranked MLB prospect, one of the MLB prospect farm systems, your team's not going to be good. It's just not. Look what the Cubs had to do. The Cubs went from 8th in 2011, 14th, 13th, then 4, then 1, then 20 now, and they are ready. They are ready to be good. They are ready to contribute and do big things. But if you're just going to not bother to pick position players well, your team's going to suck. And what do all these teams that are at the top, what have they done really well? What have the Dodgers? What have the Astros? What have the Nationals? What have they done very, very, very well, along with drafting good pitching? Good pitching, maybe not great pitching, maybe not dominant, the best, one of the best pitchers ever. You've got Dallas Keuchel in Houston and, all right. He's good. We'll see what he's going to be. But you know what else they've done? They drafted a ton of very, very good position players. And if your organization can't do that, I'm sorry. You're just going to suck way out loud. All right, that's going to wrap it for this episode of the KMP show. Again, supposed to be a shorty, but of course it wasn't. I thank you all for joining. You can follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. Be sure to subscribe to the show. The Audio Boom feed can be found at knpshow.com. You can also search for the show on iTunes. Just search the KMP show. Follow me at John's Voices on Twitter. Follow the show at KANDP show on Twitter. And be sure to bookmark voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and bookmark that click through link whenever you're shopping for your bespectacled or well, not bespectacled, you're bedazzled, you're bejeweled butt plugs and dildos. Give us some, a little bit, just a tip. Give us just the tip of your dildo money. Not for Rich Craig, but just for myself. I'm John Playtech. Thank you for listening to the KMP show. Be sure to subscribe. We'll catch you next time. I am out. Bye.
He's got AIDS.